Welcome into the Sports Objective here. A great night, a great Thursday night with us right now. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyle from the Grange Barber, how are you?
What's going on, Dave? Seems like I hadn't done one of these in, I don't know, a while. I've been AWOL. Good to be back with y'all.
I guess you were at the Super Bowl at Wendy's, but we'll
call back.
I was right there with you. I love the Super Bowl at Wendy's. Anyway, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
Not a whole lot. I'm headed back to work tomorrow after my little leave of absence for health reasons.
All right.
Did you
well,
get
I'm
that,
glad
did
that
you, get,
you and
did,
your
did
wife
you get that itch? Did you get that itch in that rash taken care of?
I did.
All right. That's it's
he got the shot he needed.
He got the shots.
Yeah.
It's amazing what they can do today to treat STDs. That's good enough.
Wow. We're off to a great start, and we've only been a minute and a half into the show, and we're off to a wonderful start. A guy that we're glad to have back, and hopefully he can save the show. Great to have this guest, right, Bubba?
Yeah, the Sun Belt Championship taking place on Saturday down in Conway, South Carolina, with the 9th-ranked Chanticleers hosting the 17th-ranked Louisiana Raging Cajuns, and right now very – excited to welcome in from Sun Times, Coastal Carolina beat writer Alan Blondin.
Gentlemen,
hey, Alan, how are you, man?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. Ready for the game.
So how many papers have you sold with this great run by Coastal? We're so excited to have Coastal do well. How are things down in your way in Conway?
Yeah, well, we're measuring it more in page views now as opposed to paper sold. Our circulation is not going to change a lot. But, a lot more people are interested in reading about the Chanticleers. That's a fact.
And rightfully so, what a season.
Alan, I know, obviously, we'll look back here at the season before we talk about the championship game with Louisiana, but outside of the program, outside of the Coastal Carolina program, nobody saw this coming. The Chants were picked at the bottom of the Sun Belt. You guys are coming off of a losing season. Do you think Jamie Chadwell and his staff saw this coming, or does it even surprise them?
The team knew they had some strengths and some they got some guys back from injury, some seniors, especially along the defensive line, the offensive line. They knew they were going to be better than they were chosen to be, at least. I do not believe anybody saw them top 10 in the country, anything like that. I think they thought they'd be competitive in the Sun Belt Conference for sure. No, there's no way anybody, even Jamie Chadwell and even anybody of those guys, nobody in the coaching staff could have envisioned 11-0, couple top 25 wins, playing for a Sun Belt championship and a berth in a New Year's Six Bowl, essentially.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, Coastal was one of the only teams in the country to get their full spring practice in. Is that correct?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said I believe Coastal was one of the only teams in the country to get their full spring practice in?
Yes, they were one of two. I believe UConn was the other one, and then they scrapped their season. So I believe they're the only one that actually is playing. They got their season in. Yeah, for whatever reason, Chadwell, they went early February to early March. And had they not done that, I don't think Grayson McCall would be quarterback today. That is one thing that led to. They had a full month to see what he could do after his redshirt freshman year. And, so they knew going into fall camp that he was at least viable for the starting position. And then when their starting quarterback, who had been their starter for a couple, for large part of a couple years, Fred Payton, had a bit of Achilles injury that kept him out for, affected him for a couple weeks, during the fall camp. Then McCall got put in with the starters and ended up proving himself and becoming the starter. And without him, there's no way that they're in this position either. So that partially led to this.
Yeah, and I was just thinking in general, the fact that Coastal was able to get their spring practice in and really nobody else was. Yeah, I wonder how much that's having to do with their success this year. Obviously, it's going to get you so far, But I would imagine it's contributing. And then, you know, Chadwell is surprising me, really. And maybe, you know, it's the fact that some people in these bigger conferences still just have a perception of the Sun Belt, even though they shouldn't. I'm surprised Chadwell's name's not coming up more for some of these Power Five jobs.
Well, it was, you know, got bandied around. At South Carolina is definitely being rumored over there at Vanderbilt. And South Carolina, you know, reports are from our sister paper, The State, in Columbia, that Ray Tanner, the AD, came down and met with Chadwell. So he was a serious candidate for that position. A lot of that has to do with he's been in the state for a while, so he's fairly well known in the state. He was at Charleston Southern for 4 years before he came to Coastal in 2017. You know, part of it is it's, you know, anybody at this level that's having this kind of year is kind of surprising and kind of new. But Chadwell is real new. I mean, he's never, you know, he coached at Delta State, North Greenville, and Charleston Southern. The highest level there was FCS. Then he came to Coastal as the basically the associate head coach and offense coordinator. Spent 2 years there. He did do the interim job in 2017 when Joe Moglia took a sabbatical. But he's really only been at this level of football, FBS, as head coach for 2 years, essentially. So I think people are looking at that. I mean, he's a rising star, but he's very unproven. And if you're going to hand somebody $4 to $5 million a year at a major program to run things, you probably want to see a bit more of a track record. So he may be 2 or 3 years away from being a real serious contender at some of these bigger jobs.
Maybe.
Well, what
maybe,
about Shane Beamer?
Well, wait a minute, Dave. When you run the offense that Chadwell runs, you have a system. And that system's going to work anywhere he installs it at and gets his players in place. And, you know, I don't understand what some of these ADs are thinking. He's won everywhere he's been. I don't care what level it was at. And you know, you talk about $4 or $5 million, they ain't got to pay him that much. Based on what he's making at Coastal, you know, somebody throws $2 million a year at him, I mean, that's a huge raise. So if Coastal can hang on to him, God bless y'all, or God bless Coastal, because they're going to keep winning. You know, he's got that system installed, and it's going to keep rolling. And some of these ADs, if I was Vandy, I'd be all over him. I mean, that would be the first phone call I would make would be to Chadwell, and I'd get that hire done. But hopefully for Coastal's sake, they'll be able to hang on to him.
I think Vandy might take – I mean, Vandy's one of the programs that could take a shot at him, and they, you know, they would be able to survive with a couple years of loss to let a guy build a program. But not everybody has that luxury of losing – you know, of such a losing tradition that you can sit there with a new guy now. And don't forget, Coastal, Chadwell was at Coastal for 3 years as the AD, and this system wasn't rolling like it was until Grayson McCall took it over. He was 3-9, 5-7, and 5-7 in his first 3 years as the offensive coordinator. So it doesn't hurt to have a quarterback that's a star in addition to having the offensive system.
No, no doubt. I just...
By the way, guys, Vanderbilt already has a new coach. They hired Notre Dame coach. I think offensive coordinator Clark Lee. He was the former. He's an alum of Vanderbilt. So the Vanderbilt job is gone. And what I was going to mention is the South Carolina job. But when Beamer hasn't. I mean, I love Shane Beamer. Don't get me wrong, but Chadwell has more of a track record than Beamer, and I love Beamer with all my heart, and I really hope that it works out for him in South Carolina. But I would pick, you know, and there again, if you're going with experience, you got to go with Chadwell.
He had coaching experience. Well, South Carolina probably right. About Beamer is the ability to put together a staff because all the contacts right. He has, and Shane was also an assistant coach there for a while, so. But talking about this Saturday, the Shants play the Raging Cajun of Louisiana for the Sun Belt Championship. And, you know, depending on what happens between Cincinnati and Tulsa, a chance potentially for a New Year's Six bowl game. What's the atmosphere like around the program right now as the Shants get ready to take on the Raging Cajun?
There's obviously a lot of excitement. And I believe that they're going to get into a New Year's Six Bowl if they out regardless. If they I think if they beat Louisiana, they're ranked 12th. Louisiana's 19th. I believe Coastal gets in as an at large, even if Cincinnati wins. Personally,
no way.
You don't think so?
No.
I hope so. Yeah, no, I believe they're in. I really do. I mean, they're going to win. They have a third top 25 win. Undefeated.
I'm not saying that you're not right. They deserve it. They absolutely deserve it. But the way the system works, there's no way. They'll take another Power 5 team. They'll take all the Power 5s they can because that's just how this crap works.
I believe what they'll do is put Coastal in and match them up with Cincinnati so that they don't have a Power 5 losing to either Coastal or Cincinnati. They've done that once before where they put two Group of 5 or independents together, and so they don't have to embarrass the Power 5 conferences to lose two games in a New Year's Six Bowls. But they would have a real hard time keeping Coastal out based on their – they would have a better resume than Ohio State. If it came down to that.
Hey, Alan, these two programs met back in what, mid-October or so down at Cajun Field, 30-27 with the Chanticleers winning on a 40-yard field goal with 8 seconds left. And I was looking back over the box score from that game, and I'll tell you what, talking about an evenly played game, 414 yards for Coastal, 212 rushing. Louisiana had 413 and 236 yards rushing. So having covered that game, tell us about that day down at Cajun Field.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly obvious these two teams are really pretty evenly matched. I mean, Louisiana is a very good football team. They've got a really good offensive line. They had two guys drafted last year off of it and very good again. Coastal's got a very good defensive line. That's going to be a battle. They both got dynamic backs. They're very similar in their abilities. Louisiana beat Iowa State by 17 early in the year. Their only losses to Coastal. I mean, if this game doesn't come down to a field goal again at the very end of the game, I'd be very, very surprised.
It just goes to show you, Alan, how well the Sun Belt is doing with the awesome contract that you guys have with the TV contract. You have used to be like just a real underdog of a conference. Now with all the big upsets and Coastal's run, you could go on and on, but. Like you said, it's such a competitive league, and you have the two teams had a great game, and that's what you want, right, for a championship. You want the Sun Belt championship. Well, I guess you want Coastal to win big, but if not, then if you have a tight game and Coastal squeaks it out again, then that's great for the league.
Yeah, I mean, having these two teams, I mean, again, they're very, very good football teams. They're deserving of their top 20 ranking. The Sun Belt was 3-0 against the Big 12 this year. Arkansas State went to Kansas State and won. Coastal went to Kansas, and Louisiana beat Iowa State. So the conference was 3-0 against the Big 12. They earned their stripes early in the season. The fact that these two teams are meeting and they're both highly ranked definitely bodes well. And again, is one of the reasons I believe if Coastal does win, goes 12-0, beats Louisiana a second time for the third top 25 win, that they can get in. And obviously, if Louisiana wins, they're both still going to be top 20 teams in the final rankings, and that would bode well for the Sun Belt as well.
Yeah, and I hope Coastal gets in to a New Year's Six Bowl along with Cincinnati. I hope you're right. I'll be shocked if they let them both in.
Piggybacking off what Dave was saying as far as the Sun Belt being such a steadily improving conference, though, I'll tell you, I mean, preseason, if you'd have said that your championship game is going to be a top 17 matchup and it's not going to be App State, that talk about turning some heads.
Yeah, and App State was right there. I mean, App State lost, you know, one score games to both Louisiana and Coastal. And their only other loss was to, at the time, a top 25 team. So they're 9-3 with those two real close losses. They could have easily – they had a lead on Coastal in the final couple minutes, and they had a late shot to beat Louisiana. So it should be App State in this game as well. They're right there on the top, you know, the tip of the top 25. So, you know, those three teams, though, were by far the best teams in the conference this year. So it was a bit top-heavy. Georgia State, Georgia Southern are pretty good teams this year. But it could have been any of those three, and App State was right there on the verge of being along with these teams. And I'm sure they're not going anywhere. Next year they're going to be one of the two or three teams to beat in this conference again. App State will be there for probably several years to come at that level.
What is the percentage for attendance at Coastal right now for the championship game and for the Myrtle Beach Bowl, speaking of App State?
Yeah, it's the same. It's what it's been all year, which is a total of 5,000, which is essentially 4,000 fans. The state's allowing them 5,000 people in the stadium for a game. The seating capacity is a little over 20,000. But that 5,000 includes players, officials, media, staff. So you're looking at 4,000 people. And it's been surprisingly loud. I mean, that BYU game, that App State game, I mean, it was amazingly loud for only 4,000 people in the stands.
Yeah, I've noticed that. It seems like in these stadiums that are allowing enough fans where they can make any kind of noise, it seems like they're trying to make extra noise to make up for who's not there. And obviously, with the kind of season App had, that BYU game was electric. You'd have thought that damn place was sold out. They came across on TV. It's just an electric atmosphere. So I'm assuming, again, speaking of App, I'm assuming they have sold their 4,000 seats. Is the Myrtle Beach Bowl sold out?
The Myrtle Beach Bowl is sold out, and my guess is 90% of that is App State people. That's why they probably put them here. They travel North Texas. I don't know why anybody would want to travel and watch that team play anyway. I don't imagine they're gonna get wiped out. It's a terrible matchup for App, unfortunately, but their fans are so loyal that they sold the place out regardless.
Yeah, I don't understand how North Texas ended up in that bowl game, but it is what it is. It's a weird year.
Is it because of the fact to fill the bowl? I mean, because you would think that with COVID that you wouldn't want to travel, and from a team from North Texas all the way to, I mean, Myrtle Beach is a nationally known product as far as people playing golf and a great place to visit as far as the vacation. But North Texas to Conway seems like a long ways away.
Well, they're 4-5, Dave. That's what's unappealing about it.
There's other teams. They had to send somebody from Conference USA.
Yeah.
There are other teams that weren't 4-5, and their 4-5 record, if you look at their schedule, they didn't play. They played SMU, was a decent team, lost by 30, and they beat Houston Baptist. I'm not sure what level they play at. A real bad FCS team, I assume. And then they beat the other teams they beat in their conference. They played all the worst of the worst, and they are 4-5. How they're in this game, I mean, if the line's not 25, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, no, that should be all out. That should be an easy win for them. And here's a fun fact for you guys. There's been one team. There's two. The other one, San Jose State. But oddly enough, North Texas is going to make their second trip to a bowl game with a losing record. Way back in the year 2000, they represented the Sun Belt as the first ever Sun Belt champions with a 5-6 record, and got in by virtue of being conference champion in the New Orleans Bowl against Colorado State. So this is the second time North Texas has been in a bowl game with a losing record. Go figure.
Yeah, I just don't understand why the organizers of the Myrtle Beach Bowl would pair a very good App State team against a very bad North Texas team. It doesn't really make any sense to me.
No, it would have been real nice. If you had to have a team for Conference USA, UTSA ended up having their Frisco Bowl taken away because of SMU being since COVID, and they got placed in some other bowl. It would have been nice to see UTSA up here against App State. That would have been a fun matchup. They got a pretty good football team this year.
It's certainly been a better matchup than North Texas.
No doubt.
No doubt.
Alan, another thing very quickly, Dave, I wanted to point out as far as Coastal Carolina last weekend, that game against Troy, that 42-38 thriller where they had the 12-point lead there in the fourth quarter, and Troy with the backup quarterback was able to rally. How impressive was that final drive? Grayson McCall had thrown a pick on just his second interception of the year, and he's done such an excellent job, making good decisions and very uncharacteristic mistake. But then they respond with a 5-play, 75-yard drive that looked like it was on air.
Yeah, I mean, Grayson McCall basically showed that what he's worth there. He threw for a career high, which is basically season high, 338 yards. Just was hitting seams, it was pretty amazing what he did there in the final. They had a 120 with no timeouts, and he only needed like 40 seconds of it, 45 seconds I think he used. And yeah, it showed how he's grown. He was already comfortable. He ran this offense for 3 years in high school, very similar. He was already comfortable in it, but that drive just kind of showed how comfortable and how much he's grown in this offense over the course of 11 games.
It was one of the most impressive drives I've seen in a long time. I mean, it was effortless. It really looked effortless, like they were like, all right, time to go win the game.
Yeah, and then when you consider what the pressure that you assume they must be feeling, knowing what's on the line, they lose to Troy at 5-5, and everything that they've been working for all year is gone. I mean, as far as the New Year's Six hopes anyway. And so it was, you factor everything in there. It was pretty amazing.
Have you heard if they don't get the New Year's Six spot, is it New Orleans Bowl? What is the talks?
Well, that's a good question. So I've written about this a little bit. I projected what bowls. Now, the problem is the Sun Belt is contracted with 5 bowls.
Mm-hmm.
2 of them are too early. The New Orleans Bowl is being played like 4 days after the Sun Belt Championship.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
They can't play in a Myrtle Beach Bowl. Georgia State is in Georgia Southern are already committed to bowls. There are basically 2 bowls remaining that are contracted to the Sun Belt. The Camellia is
Montgomery.
And the other one is in Montgomery, yeah. So those are the only 2 that would be available that are left that Coastal and Louisiana could play in that are contracted to the Sun Belt. So
the Camellia, and what's the other one?
The one is the Camellia Bowl.
Yeah, that's in Montgomery.
There's actually 2. According to what I saw, Kyle, there's 2 this year in Montgomery.
It's 2 bowls in Montgomery this year. What the hell is the other one?
The Montgomery Bowl. The Fenway Bowl has been moved.
The Fenway Park Bowl has been moved to Montgomery. Okay.
Yes, right. The Fenway Bowl got moved to Montgomery, and the Community Bowl. The other one's the Cure Bowl in Orlando, I think. So those are the only 2 that are contracted. Now, I spoke to the commissioner, Keith Gill, of the Sun Belt 2 weeks ago. He was pretty adamant about them playing in their bowl, in their contracted bowl. I think in the week that passed, until this past Monday when I spoke to him again, he must have spoken to some other potential bowls that were bigger that would allow Coastal and or Louisiana to play against the Power 5 in a much bigger, higher profile bowl with a bigger payout, because he changed his tune and he was saying that they're going to wait. They're going to see what's available after the Sun Belt Championship. Mm-hmm. There may be some other opportunities for these teams to play in bowls aside from their contracted bowls. So in a week's time, he obviously had some conversations with bigger bowls. So there's a possibility that Coastal and or Louisiana would play in a bigger bowl against a better opponent than what the Pure Camellia would offer, which one of those is the MAC. None of the MAC schools this year, other than maybe Buffalo, can excite a whole lot of people. The other one's the American Athletic matchup. So there's a couple possibilities that are decent teams. But, you know, if Coastal would be facing what would be considered a lesser opponent in either of those roles, and that would be a disappointing ending to the season they've had. So I guess we're going to see what happens, and the commissioner of the Sun Belt's leaving things for a bigger possibility.
I wouldn't be surprised if the bowl that is showing some interest, and maybe I'm wrong, the Independence Bowl, I could see them obviously wanting Lafayette for geographical purposes. And if Coastal gets left out of the New Year's Six Bowl, I'm sure they'd love to have a top 12, top 10 Coastal down in Shreveport. I don't know if you've heard that, but the Independence Bowl has done some interesting things like that in the past.
Yeah, of the other bowls, aside from the Sun Belt, I don't have a great guess as to where they would go if they didn't get to one of those. It appears the Peach Bowl would be the primary destination if they did get into a New Year's Six, from what I've heard and from speaking to some people involved in that. If they do get into a New Year's Six, I think their likely destination is the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. If they don't, and they do not play in one of the contracted Sun Belt Bowls, I don't have a great guess for where they would head on that. There's a lot of bowls have been canceled. A lot of teams have been opting out. So by the time all this is over on Sunday, the landscape could be a little bit different than it already is right now.
Alan, thank you so much for coming on. By the way, you guys have a big edition coming up as far as the championship game. What do you have coming up this weekend for us to read?
Oh, I've got, I've got a lot out there already right now. The game preview, my notes that I did a notebook that I usually do. That's looks at all the different – Coastal Carolina's got a number of players that are up for national awards. They've reached either the finals or the semifinals of these. Online sports book has – Jamie Chadwell as the favorite to win the Home Depot Coach of the Year. And it also has Teron Jackson, the defensive end, as the favorite to win the Nagurski Award. So a couple of Coastal's players are looking and coaches are looking like they may win major awards. Chad Staggs, the defensive coordinator for the Royals. What's that?
A leg lamp?
What now? A leg lamp?
You said they were going to win major awards.
Yeah, well,
brother, if you don't get that joke, I'm not explaining it to you.
Yeah, that was that Married with Children, possibly?
No, A Christmas Story.
Christmas Story.
I remember the
don't shoot your eye out. Be careful.
I couldn't remember. I think leg lamp was probably.
Yeah, guys, Kyle's trying to be Kyle's being appropriate and inappropriate at the same time.
Indeed.
Yeah.
There's that. I wrote about Lorenzo Taliaferro passing away, and I've spoken to some of his former teammates, D'Angelo Henderson. I've got something about that coming out tomorrow about kind of a memoriam to him. There's a lot out there already. There's some out there. I wrote the big story about Chadwell. I'm sure you guys probably saw that. He signed that an extension through 2027 that I estimate the school didn't disclose exact terms, but I estimate he's making about $800,000 to $850,000 a year right now, up from $375,000, which what he was making this year in base salary. He's looking to make up to $1.2 million in bonuses, of course, this year with all the stuff they're capable of achieving. So out there, that big story about that. I also wrote about their recruiting, how that looked. They just signed a bunch of people yesterday. So all that's out there right now. It's already out online as we speak on MyrtleBeachOnline.com.
Alan, as always, thank you so much. Good luck to Coastal Carolina this weekend. It's going to be, I think, a fun game. And I'd love to have you back on again soon. Thanks for all your help this week, or this season, rather, too, with Inside Slant.
Yeah. Yes, sir. All right, gentlemen. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks. Have a good night, my friend. All right. That's Alan Blunden there. And
you know, guys, when he said a major award, and it's Christmas time, my mind immediately went leg lamp, and I thought for sure he'd get the reference, but he didn't. And so, you know, maybe I shouldn't assume things before I make jokes.
Well, speaking of which, you brought up the Super Bar from Wendy's, and we have Dave Thomas on, and he never hears a. I don't know how in the world that came up before the pre-show, Dave. We tried so hard.
Well done, Dave. Well done.
And he brings up the Super Bar before we had even – he knew you were going to come on tonight. So, anyway, how are you doing, Dave? Actually, the play-by-play, let me introduce him, the play-by-play voice of the James Madison Dukes and JMU playing East Carolina. So we shift gears from the gridiron. We're going to go now to – the basketball court. And Dave, welcome back. Glad to have you back on with us, man. Not hearing you for some reason. I don't know.
No, I'm not getting him either.
That's what I was trying to do for Kyle, is to mute him so I could bring you on. But for some reason, we're not having.
Dave,
we
don't have could, if you could leave and come back, because we're not getting your audio, if you don't mind. So Dave's going to leave and rejoin us here in a second. And hopefully
Dave's not here, man.
Will be fixed. Dave's not here, man. Yeah, a little Cheech and Chong.
Cheech and
Chong.
Yeah.
We're referencing all over the places tonight.
That's right. The play-by-play voice.
Bubba, I'm sure you even got the major award reference, right? You did. Leg limb. Yeah, I know Dave.
Oh, yeah.
It's a major award.
I like the movie. It's not one of my favorite Christmas movies compared to, you know, Christmas Vacation and Home Alone and different ones. But, no, I like the movie, and I certainly got the reference.
Yeah, it's my all-time favorite Christmas movie because the humor in that movie is so clever, and it's just such a simplicity to the movie. It's great.
And I'm so old, I saw it in the theater before they run it for 10 days straight on TBS. Not really, but. See, it feels that way with Christmas Story.
Dave, now, we'll see if we can hear Dave now. Dave, are you with us? And we still can't hear Dave. What in the world?
I don't know. We normally can hear Dave. I don't know if it's good. We normally have a Google Chrome, but for some reason, the audio is not there. I don't know why. Nothing like live streaming a show. And yeah, what we need to do is switch. We need to have Kyle muted and have Dave talk.
Well, you know, well, I'll leave.
Well, hey, Dave, do you want to call an audible and go with since Jeff Sharon's waiting backstage from the Black and Gold Banneret? Do we want to go ahead and talk UCF and BYU and then come back to Dave if that's okay?
Or, can you hear me now?
We got
there.
You, Dave.
We got there. Dave. Dave's there, man. Dave.
Sorry about that, guys. Technology.
do you know how you fixed it?
Yes, I do, actually. Yeah. Okay. All else fails, go to the settings and start there, right?
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. Dave, as you heard, as we started, you had never heard that Wendy's reference, had you?
You know, it's funny. It came up this week at work, and it was one of our younger employees. But I'm not sure I understand what you're talking about because we have a lot of youthful folks in our building and had to explain the whole process to them. So it doesn't come up as much anymore, but it used to quite often.
I bet. Did anybody ever ask if you were the real Dave Thomas?
You know, we used to pull a stunt in college where we would go to the local Wendy's and the guys that I was in class with, we would go in and say, this is Dave Thomas of Wendy's. We're his representatives. We're here for our free food. And never worked, but we gave it a shot at least. So when he passed away, I got a lot of calls. I do know that.
Are you still alive, Dave?
I barely. I'm hanging on. 2020 has been a little rough. So
yeah.
Speaking of which, we want to talk of the gridiron too with you about FCS. Bubba and I were talking about that, knowing you were coming on tonight. We'll have you back on. It's hard to believe that FCS football would normally be in the rolling right now. And we talk of having you on talking about an FCS championship or in a deep run into the playoffs. Instead, we haven't even cranked up yet. It's such a weird year to even think that way. But we're having you on talking about basketball and JMU. And how are things going with the Dukes so far?
You know, it's been an interesting year, to put it mildly. We have a coaching change and a lot of guys transfer, so a lot of new faces coming in. A brand new facility that JMU has opened, a $139.5 million facility, which is spectacular, to put it mildly. But this team has been on two COVID-19 pauses already, one before the season got started, and they just came off of one on Monday. So they're back and ready to go. The start and stop has been difficult for a new coaching staff and a new team to gel together. So they're anxious to get back on the court, which they've been doing since Monday. They're anxious to play their first road game, which they're going to be doing here on Saturday. So it's a team that is ready to go. There's a lot of talent, but you got to get it together and get them on the same page. And that may take a little while because they've only played 3 games.
No doubt about it. And, you know, James Madison, thinking about the last couple of years, has had East Carolina's number. I mean, I remember the who was the player's name? It escapes me right in the moment. Dave, we're doing again a live show, but the buzzer beater 2 years ago.
Ducky Mosley.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Bubba and I were at that game, and wow. Talk about, you know, the place is a lot of fans, and it was just like a funeral right after that buzzer beater. So, not the kind of atmosphere you think East Carolina's won the game, and then that buzzer beater. And I know that Sean Williams, that was playing with the Pirates at the time, was on a suspension for 6 games. And we had last year, of course, JMU winning. So I know it's 2 in a row now, at least that amount that I know of. But JMU, I know, has had our number here the last couple of years.
Well, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a challenge this year. I've watched I didn't watch the SMU game, but I've watched the last couple of games prior to that for East Carolina. Big, strong, physical, shoot the ball well. And we could tell the last couple of years, Coach Dooley was putting the pieces in place. And it takes a little time, you know. And that's the situation that Coach Martin Byington is coming into, where there was talent on this team the last couple of years. If you guys have seen, it can just never go in the right direction. Coach Dooley's got these guys going in the right direction now. He's got size. He's got athleticism. And most importantly, he's got the 2 things he really hasn't had the last couple of years, which scare me to death: depth and good health. This team is healthy, and he's got lots of players. And listen, you can't coach 7-foot. You just can't, no matter whether they play 2 minutes or 10 minutes. And you got 3 of them. So it's going to be a challenge for JMU. Now, it's a different philosophy this year as far as what they want to try to do. Coach Byington wants guys on the court that can handle the basketball. So it's not uncommon to see the 4 or the 5 bring the ball up the floor. He likes interchangeable parts. He likes athleticism. You may see a shot in the first 5 or 6 seconds of the shot clock, and it may go down to 5 or 6 seconds. So he brings a lot of things to the table that we've missed the last couple of years. Athleticism is one thing. The recruits he's brought in, these guys can definitely get up and down the court. There's a lot of talent here. Again, they just got to learn to play together. That's going to be the biggest challenge.
You know, Dave, it's funny that you bring that up as far as Mark Byington. He, of course, played at UNC Wilmington from 94 to 98, and getting up and down the court was the last thing those guys did in those years under Jerry Wainwright. But what a tremendous job Mark Byington did in his 7 years as a head coach at Georgia Southern, 4 20-win seasons during that time in Statesboro. And I was just looking at his track record, I think, is an excellent hire. I'm surprised that UNC Wilmington, honestly, hadn't made the move before hiring Coach Siddle. I think that was an excellent hire as well. But maybe prior to that, I'm surprised Mark hadn't made his way back to UNC Wilmington. But the Seahawks' loss is undoubtedly JMU's gain. And taking a look at some of your top scorers, Matt Lewis, 6'5", senior, that's averaging more than 19 points and over 5 rebounds. Tell us about him.
You know, Matt's a senior, obviously. He's been around this program. He's one of the guys that came back. There are 5 guys that returned. Matt and Zach Jacobs are the lone seniors on this team that have been around. He was a preseason player of the year. Had the team played better last year, he would have been the player of the year. I had guys who had votes tell me, listen, if you'd won more games, he's the automatic vote because he really was the best player of the conference last year. Matt is a guy who is unselfish. Sometimes he passes the ball too much. Sometimes he doesn't look to make the play. The last couple of years, it's sort of been like Matt needed to make a play, and he felt that he needed to make a play because he wasn't getting some support from some guys. And I loved all those kids. Hated to see the guys who transferred leave. But quite honestly, he wasn't getting the help. Matt's got help now. He doesn't have to run the point. He's a true 2. He can play 3. Shoot all over the court, great athleticism, but he passes very, very well. And right now I think he's trying to find a comfort level with guys who can handle the basketball and set up plays for him, because if he can get in position, he's really hard to stop.
No question about it. I hear
got an ice cream truck.
It's my wife. One of my wife's Christmas decorations is a Christmas clock and chimes a different Christmas song each hour.
Let's get ready to yell, baby, give me a push up, baby.
Oh. Get you a push up. All right, so you got your push up.
Anyway, seriously, Dave, with the matchup this weekend.
Dave, wait a minute. Hold on, Dave. Dave Richmond, hold on a minute. Dave Thomas, look, yes. I got a little side topic here. For some reason, these two ass clowns make fun of me for calling my wife baby. I don't get it. Now, Dave, I'm sure you're a married man. Do you call your wife baby, sweetie, honey? I mean, you call her something like that, right?
I call her a variety of those things, yeah.
Yeah, see, exactly, yeah.
It is not the fact that you call her baby. It's all about the delivery.
Well, you know what? I know this is a family show. I would say something, but I ain't going to. But it's the delivery. Well, okay. All right. If you say so. But anyway, but back to basketball. Yeah.
Back to basketball, please, before we lose. Well, we don't have to worry about an FCC license, Dave, so I guess we're okay. But as far as the matchup is concerned, what are the keys for JMU, and what do you think about East Carolina? Because going back to both these teams have a rich tradition, history of the CAA days, and I know that I can tell you firsthand that Pirate Nation, when they look at non-conference, if JMU's up there, if you have Wilmington up there, they're two teams that are top of the list when it comes to non-conference, and we're in the year 2020. Many years after the CAA, and they still want those teams. So I don't know about the Duke fans.
Yeah, it's always a fun game.
Duke fans, how do they feel?
They always love seeing ECU on the schedule, whether it be football, basketball, baseball, whatever. You're right, it goes back to that history. And quite honestly, just sidestepping off the topic for a minute, what's going on in college athletics, we need these games back. We need these games on a regular basis in football, in basketball, in baseball, in softball, because teams need to stop zigzagging across the country, wasting athletic budgets, playing in conferences that just don't make sense anymore. That's my opinion, not speaking for anybody else but me. But back to your question, yeah, JMU fans love these games because there are history here. Looking at this game, JMU's got to rebound well. I mean, the size of the Pirates and how they get to the board, their physicality could be somewhat of an issue for JMU. Again, they've only played four games. So matching up, I think size-wise, ECU is going to have an advantage all around the court. Can JMU get the ball off the glass and then make something happen with it? Transition basketball is going to be huge for JMU, both getting out in transition and doing something positive, but also getting back and not allowing ECU to get into a flow.
Dave, to piggyback off the topic you just brought up, East Carolina Athletic Director John Gilbert has been vocal about wanting to be able to form regional conferences for non-revenue sports. You guys are in a regional conference for everything. I don't know if that would be, you know, just between FBS schools, where maybe App State and East Carolina and some other schools are in the same conference for Olympic sports. Have you heard anything about that up there at JMU, about some of these group of five schools that play FBS football wanting to form regional conference for Olympic sports if the NCAA would allow it?
That's been one of the many topics that are out there. I mean, people are really curious to see what's going to happen in college sports. And, you know, I've been hearing for a while that when it comes to football, your Power Five teams were going to pull away. But nobody can figure out how. How's this going to happen? What's going to cause this? What's going to trigger it? Well, lo and behold, a pandemic. There you go. There's really the start of this. And there was a survey presented to the NCAA a couple of weeks ago stating that Power Five football teams needed to pull away and they needed to really look at the other sports and rearrange how they were going to make the alignment. Now, it's up to the NCAA what they do with it because, again, they don't control the college football playoffs. And quite frankly, everything stirs around college football. That's what's going to generate a lot of this. And, you know, when you take a team like Appalachian, they move to the Sun Belt, they're doing well in football. But how are they doing in the other sports? And what's it costing to get them there? And I think these regionalized, whether it's FBS, FCS, I mean, I think if the Power Five pulls away, you may see a realignment where FBS and FCS all of a sudden become one or the line blurs. And again, that's just my speculation of what's going to happen. because there's too many teams that have played like JMU, ECU, Appalachian State. The history is there. The rivalry is already built in. Capitalize on that. Don't try to force somebody to come out and watch a team that they didn't nothing about because they're halfway across the country. So what I'm hearing from people is about bringing in teams who people know and they care about, like these matchups at JMU and ECU. And again, I remember looking back to last year, even at the Convocation Center, it was early in the year, JMU was still playing well, but there was a good fan base turnout for this game. And college athletics, the budgets, the way they're suffering now, especially for teams like at FCS who didn't play football this fall, and you're going to try to cram everything in from the start of December in through June, it's going to be tough. You need to generate a schedule that's going to be friendly to your fan base.
What are you hearing about? I'm all over the place now with you. What are you hearing about TV coverage for FCS football this spring? Is it going to be more opportunities to be on TV, or is it going to still be also kind of put on streaming services and secondary networks? I mean, I would think ESPN would be ready to show some football in the spring. There's not a lot going on outside of Major League Baseball.
Well, you got the NBA that's going to be played.
Yeah, true.
And trust me, ask the people that are unemployed from ESPN now about the money that's spent on those rights, because that's where their paychecks went. ESPN spends a boatload of money on rights fees. And listen, to broadcast these games isn't cheap unless you're doing it at the collegiate level like we do, because we're not making that kind of money. But they're spending a ton of money on these games. They say there's going to be more avenues out there, but I still think a lot of it's going to be streaming services. The CAA is in a deal with Flow Sports out of Texas, and it's a subscription service. And JMU is the only school in the conference to vote against it, because JMU had something called Matazone, and it was free because it had sponsorship and it was making money. And it was the most quality product in the league. And so now fans who want to watch JMU games have got to pay for Flow Sports. And that's a sensitive subject around this fan base and some of the fan bases around the Colonial Athletic Association. I would hope that there's going to be, and I know there was some talking heads saying that FCS football belonged in the spring because it was the little brother and got no attention. Football's played in the fall, and that's when it should be played, period. And telling a kid who goes to James Madison or Elon or Lenoir Rhyne or anywhere else, because it's not a Power Five conference, you don't matter. Football matters to those fan bases, man. It's important to the fan base. And you ask JMU Nation about that. Listen, you remember 2017 when JMU came to ECU and won. There was a huge contingent down there. So it matters. Football's played in the fall. And if you think people don't care about the lower tier, then you need to pay a little more attention to it, in my opinion. Again, speaking for nobody else but me, but that's something I kind of get riled up about, thinking that it doesn't matter, because these kids work just as hard. They have to sacrifice their bodies and their time and everything else. And these athletic departments have been spending a ton of money trying to get these kids ready to play through COVID. So it matters. I hope there's going to be extra platforms. So a long answer to your short question, but I think a lot of it's going to be streaming, most likely.
You know what? I would think, and I'm with you, before I say this, don't get me wrong, FCS football, just like I've heard them talk about Group of Five football, put it in the spring, kiss my ass.
Yeah,
you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, they have.
But let me say this as far as other platforms. If ESPN or CBS Sports Network or somebody doesn't step up and pick up these games this spring, they're missing a chance to get a lot of viewers, because I know me and Bubba, we'll be itching to watch college football in the spring. So just for this year only, I hope it's available somewhere besides Flow Sports.
I hope so too.
And that sounds real good. And another thing is the very fact, though, Dave, that the arrogance of the quote-unquote Power Five, and it's really from that network. You know, ESPN and Disney, they've got to get their act together when it comes to, we talk all the time about the made-for-TV event. I call it the made-for-TV event. It's not the college football playoff, because they'll just put whatever teams they want. It really does. You don't even need a committee. You can just put four teams in there. It really doesn't matter. And that's one of the things I've always loved about FCS, is the very fact, and every other division, is the very fact there's a real playoff and a real champion. And so everybody can get mad at me until they man up and put on their big boy pants. And they're so scared. It's not about money. It's never been about money. It's about, they don't want Alabama or Clemson or whoever the brand name team to lose to the underdog. For example, James Madison, let's say you guys, I can't wait for you guys to move up. I love.
We'll just use the team this year, Cincinnati. The Bearcats keep dropping in the polls, yet they're undefeated. And let me tell you something. Cincinnati blows out Tulsa this coming weekend, and, you know, some other things happen, and they don't get a shot. The only thing you talk about what's going to make the Power Five move away, and the reason it hasn't been – the reason the Group of Five conferences have not filed an antitrust lawsuit against the Power Five schools and the playoff, and before that the BCS, because they're scared they're going to move away. I think it's to the point now where it's blatant what they're doing to Cincinnati right now. I think you got to sue. And if you sue and then they choose to break away because of that, then so be it. Because we don't have a shot right now of ever playing for a national championship. Right. East Carolina, just like Cincinnati this year, could go 12-0, and they're going to do something to keep East Carolina out of the playoffs.
Well, look at UCF. Well, we're going to be talking about that. But UCF won 25 straight games. And that's when I was done with the playoff people. I mean, I don't even have to pull for UCF, but they're a member of our league. And the fact that they won 25 straight and they don't even give a shot at the national championship. And you know what? You can make it where there's plenty of teams and you hear all excuses. I love the fact that they don't care about academics at all. And all of a sudden they use academics as a reason why they can't have, in my opinion, I want a 16-team playoff.
You know what, Dave? 8 would work. You could have your 5 so-called Power 5 conference champions, 2 at-larges, and then the highest-ranked team from the Group of 5. And then you'd have 8 teams every year. And it wouldn't be equal access for the Group of 5, but at least we'd be guaranteed a spot every year. You could do it with 8 and make everybody happy. Wouldn't even have to go to 16. It is so.
I think we lost Kyle there. Bubba, did you finally get that mute button working for Kyle? I think we finally Anyway, I know what he was saying. I don't have a problem moving to 8. It's a baby step in the right direction. But, you know, Commissioner Resco talking yesterday about, I mean, things are so bad for the American now that he's lobbying for, you know, for having the BCS back. I'm like, oh, my God. Is it that really that bad? But at least my point I was making for you, Dave, is at least you guys in the FCS, you have a real national champion. And JMU with the CAA is known as the SEC of the FCS. And so you guys have the best league with FCS, and you guys have a legitimate, you know, that's what hurts is the fact that East Carolina basketball, at least on paper, has a chance to win the national championship. JMU the same. There's a whole bunch of teams that our Cinderella stories every year in the tournament, and God hope we have the NCAA tournament for many reasons, but it's nice to see those Cinderella stories. And, you know, it's a shame that college football, that they can't get their act together to have that.
Well, it does make a difference. I mean, we have a young man, Juwan Hamilton, who transferred to JMU from Central Florida, and we're standing on the sideline 2 days before the national championship in Frisco, Texas. And I said, so how does this compare to a bowl game for you? And he says, listen, man, for a bowl game, you practice 14 or 15 times over 25 or 30 days, and you play the game. And you play the game, and you know, once you play the game, it's over. Here, every week matters. Every snap in practice matters, because that could be the snap that helps you win and move on. And he said, this is so much better. It's better for fans. It's better for teams. Listen, there's a lot of reasons why it's better. That's why they've never toyed with the NCAA basketball tournament, because it's magical. It is fun. And you have those stories, but still you just had the true opportunity. Again, everybody knows right now you've got an opportunity in college basketball. You got to win your tournament, and you got to get lucky. You got some things that got to happen. We understand that, but you have that opportunity. Cincinnati, ECU, Central Florida, a lot of other teams don't have that chance. And kids are starting to realize that. And if you see why kids are stepping down to play FCS football, one of the reasons why, and JMU uses that in the recruiting spiel. Coach Kurt Cignetti confirmed that this week. We talk about it because JMU is recruiting against ECU, against Virginia Tech, against UVA, and they're getting some of these kids. Nearly every kid JMU brought in, the 12 they signed, had Power 5 or at least FBS offers, and they use that. Listen, you will have an opportunity to play for a national championship. Or do you want to go to a bowl game somewhere Tuesday before Christmas in the middle of nowhere. No offense to any of those bowls, but that's really what it is. And that's how kids look at it. And that's giving FCS teams an opportunity to use that to their advantage.
Why not? I agree with you 100%. That's one of the reasons why this time of year for me is exciting for FCS. Why I watch FCS is because that very thing, going all the way back to, I would say I started with definitely the Appalachian State when they went three back-to-back-to-back, maybe even before them, but that, I certainly remember just how intense that was. And same thing with you guys, beating East Carolina, of course, the national championship, beating East Carolina a runner-up, and I mean, it's a lot of fun. But as far as basketball, we got the big matchup on Saturday, and I know that one of the things that's been, I'll leave you with this, how about fans at JMU? How is that, how are you guys handling that as far as COVID-19? And right now we don't have pretty much, there's a limited media and maybe a few parents, and that's about it.
It's a handful. It's basically invitation only from the team. Right. I think each player gets a couple of tickets, and then there's friends of the program, supporters, but I mean, maybe 50, 75 at the most, and they're scattered out. The new arena seats 8,500. They have them basically in really one section. But it's sparse compared to what it could be. And Virginia's tightening things down a little bit. So it's not going to be a pleasant experience. It's really unusual watching a game going on. I'm glad they put me on the concourse so some of the officials can't hear some of the things I have to say, or that I might not make it through a game. But it's just very, very different. But once the guys get playing, they seem to be okay. They see it's basketball once they're playing. And a lot of these guys have played AAU. They played in empty gyms before. So it's nothing different. It's more different for us in some respects than it is for them. But this is going to be a big one. Fans are not, you know, ECU is bouncing back after a tough loss, and they're trying to prove that they belong in the American Conference. And I think they've got a chance to scare some people. JMU's trying to, you know, both of these teams are picked ninth in their conference. JMU's trying to go out and make a name for itself before you start CAA play. And this would be a good way to do it, because I think this is a very good East Carolina team.
It's going to be a great Saturday, 1 o'clock. And how can people hear the coverage? And during the week, I know you do like 10 shows, don't you?
You do a lot. Yeah, it seems that way. We have 8 radio stations, and again, at any given time, I'm on any of them. But to hear the game Saturday, you can hear it online, WSVAonline.com. That's Sam Victor Alpha. So WSVAonline.com. I'll go on the air at 12:30. We'll tip things off shortly after 1.
All right, Dave, we want to have you back, obviously, before FCS kicks off. It's hard. That's just really – I'm trying to – I was telling Bubba earlier this afternoon, I'm trying to get used to that, and North Carolina high school football is about the same time, so we're trying to get used to saying that. That the fact is I could actually be talking about a championship and around that time, or certainly with my birthday in April, or the start of the playoffs, rather, so we'll when it comes to high school football. Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it. And Merry Christmas to you, and happy holidays, and happy new year. Hopefully 21 is a lot better than 20 for sports and just life in general.
No doubt about it, guys. Thanks for the invite. Sorry, it took me a little while to get on. I appreciate the invitation, and I look forward to it anytime.
All right. Take care, my friend. Good night. That's Dave Thomas, and appreciate his patience. Speaking of patience, our next guest, sorry we're running long tonight. With us right now, very special guest, right, Bubba?
Yeah, welcome into the show. I've been on their turf before, and they were nice enough to have me on back in the end of September before East Carolina and UCF met in what was the Pirates season opener. Welcome in from the Black and Gold Banneret, which is UCF's SB Nation site, Jeff Sharon. Jeff, how are you?
Hey, Bubba. Hey, Dave. I think UCF just got called for another false start from that game.
That beat anything I'd ever seen. I don't know that I'd ever seen a team had 6 or 7 false starts in a game, much less consecutively.
They had, I think, 4 before they took their first snap in that game. To give you just kind of how up and down the season has been.
It was all that crowd noise, Jeff.
Right. And just to give you an idea, an indication of how up and down the season has been, Matt Lee, the center of that game, who had so many problems, made all conference.
Wow.
Props to that kid.
Yeah, no doubt. It's certainly with UCF. I know the fans have got to be disappointed. You guys have been so, so high. But still, you've had a great – I mean, to me, I think you've had a good season. It's just not – the recent expectations, I guess, for the Knights?
Yeah, it's I mean, you know how our fan base is, right? It's, you know, that after the undefeated season in 2017, you know, the sky's the limit. And, you know, this year, I think on the part of some of the fan base, yeah, they view the season as a disappointment, but I don't view it this way because you know, yes, they're 6-3 going into this bowl game, but the two losses were to Cincinnati, or the two big losses I thought were to Cincinnati and Tulsa. I thought they didn't play very well in the Tulsa game. They probably should have won that game. And then the third loss was at Memphis. I thought that one was the real killer because UCF nearly set a record for total yardage. Dylan Gabriel set a school record for passing yards in a game, threw for over 600 yards in that game, and they lost by 1 point on a missed field goal at the gun. So, that was a real bummer, but those are all coin flip games. I thought UCF played really well against Cincinnati on the home field and lost to a better team by 3 points. You know, all things considered, I mean, you know, a couple snaps here and there, and, you know, some of the people who I thought, you know, I was one of them. I kind of buy high and a little bit. And I thought UCF had a shot to go undefeated this year. Didn't work out that way, but I mean, we've all seen how Cincinnati is this year, and to be within 3 points of them at the end of that game, and it was nearly a miracle at the Meadowlands situation at the very end of that game too. Was, you know, a bummer, but this is a good football team that is going to face BYU in Boca.
No doubt about it. We want to talk about the bowl. One quick thing, I know you want to talk the college football playoff. One question I had for you, a sidebar, if you don't mind, is the transfer. I was surprised to see, maybe I shouldn't be surprised to see the transfer with Mackenzie Milton to Florida State. I thought he was going to stick around, but I guess with Dylan Gabriel, he pretty much unfortunately lost his job.
Well, it's one of those things where I think Mackenzie Milton, Mike Miyake, the Orlando Sentinel, actually said this, so I got to give credit to him. He said that Mackenzie Milton left UCF for the good of UCF, which I think is true. We all saw how devastating that injury was. But Dylan Gabriel took the job last year and has so far set the world on fire. I think he's going to own the UCF passing record book by the time he's done here. And McKenzie wants one more shot to start, and he's just not going to get it in front of Dylan Gabriel, and you can't play two quarterbacks. So it was... as a fan, it's heartbreaking to see a player who meant so much, not just on the field, but, you know, but transcended the sport in UCF, you know, leave. But for those of us who were covering the team, really wasn't a surprise. We thought that, you know, at that point, you know, Dylan had solidified himself as the starter. He's an outstanding passer. I think he's going to play in the NFL. And Mackenzie's a class kid. He's always been a class kid. You know, does the right thing. And he should, I would not be surprised one bit to see him start for Florida State when they have their season opener, next Labor Day against Notre Dame. I would not be surprised one bit. It'll be painful seeing him in garnet and gold as opposed to black and gold. But, you know, those of us here in Orlando, you know, we know how much he meant to the program and getting it to where it is, and nobody deserves a shot, you know, to get back on the field and perform well and get a shot at the NFL more than Mackenzie Milton, because he quite literally nearly gave his limb for UCF. People don't realize how close he was to having his leg amputated on that Friday after Thanksgiving in Tampa. And I'm happy for him that he gets a shot. And hey, he beat Mike Norvell 3 times. So you got to give Mike Norvell a lot of credit. He's like, hey, you know, if you can't beat him, have him join you, right?
Yeah, I was going to talk about that. And also, there's been a neat kind of similar parallels, if you will, with Alex Smith in Washington, who the team I really follow closely. And then with Mackenzie Milton, I know they're not on the same level, but not the same injury, but both having the legs broken, multiple surgeries. Both of them could have lost limb. I mean, just like there's a lot of parallels there. Alex is playing again. I know he's injured, but he's playing again for Washington. And you were talking about, you made a great point. You can't start Mackenzie Milton over Gabriel because Gabriel has played so well. And it's also not fair personally to Mackenzie to sit on the bench for a year when you know that he has a shot to, I mean, he's been a great starter. And I think that the injury, he's overcome that. So enough to play at this level again.
Yeah. I mean, it's that's the right call. I mean, you can't play two quarterbacks, right? So, you know, it's, I think we were all hoping that we would see Mackenzie maybe take the field one more time at UCF and just kind of put the bow on it. Right. You know, even if it was just taking a knee, you know, in the final home game or in the bowl game or in Tampa. But Mackenzie said that's not what he wants to do. He doesn't want to get stepped back on the field for sentimental reasons. He wants to step back on the field to win a job and play well. And given Florida State's quarterback situation, I think he's in a great position to do it.
Yes, he is. Let's talk now. I know, Bubba, we want to talk the college football playoff, right?
Yeah, that's what Jeff was obviously backstage, you know, in the green room hearing that conversation that we were having with Dave Thomas from James Madison and just the tremendous, you know, 25-game win streak, whatever, that UCF put together here just a few seasons ago. So give us your perspective on that, Jeff, and just being absolutely screwed, for lack of a better way of putting it, by the college football playoff.
I mean, we feel Coastal Carolina and Cincinnati's pain. We're all sitting here being like, see, we told you, you know. And, you know, I'm 100% in their corner. And I get it. You know, I don't know if Cincinnati is one of the four best teams in the country. I don't know if Coastal Carolina is one of the four best teams in the country. But what I do know is that the system as it stands is designed to keep the non-autonomous five teams out. It is designed to do that. You know, I was thinking back to what I think it was Ken was saying is that you know, litigation. I'm like, you're not going to win litigation against these guys because you signed up for the contract, and number two, if you say, well, they're leaving us out, well, they can say in a 4-team playoff, we're leaving one of our conference champions out every year. So what's your problem? Or Kyle, I'm sorry. My thought was, you know, I personally believe that the only system that would work in FBS is a 16-team playoff with all 10 conference champions getting in and the rest of them going to at-large teams. But we got to get to 8 first. And I know that it's a stepping stone, right? Like they always said, you know, back when the BCS happened, they were, you know, before that, everyone was like, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, they will never leave the Rose Bowl, right? And lo and behold, they did. And the BCS was born. And then when the BCS was around, everybody said the same thing, right? You guys remember this. Dave, they'll never have a playoff. It'll right. never happen. All of a sudden, what do we have? We have a 4-team playoff. The problem is go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to add to your point. My thing is, I love all the, I think that we should get a group of guys on the show and the media that were, and have every, let's come up with every excuse they've used. There's only one, the dog ate my homework is not one, but they've used every excuse of why they can't have it. And my favorite one now that I've heard recently, and I'll let you, I'm sorry, I'll make this quick point, is that they're saying, they go all the time, said, yeah, I said, you know, the college football playoff, they're not going to make more money. I'm like, are you kidding me? If they had a 16 team playoff, they get to sell more advertising. What are you smoking? It's not the right drug. You're wrong. What? You're absolutely wrong.
So a 16 team playoff, let's say they went to 8. Let's just say that. Okay. Which I do think, and my colleague Eric Lopez has said many times, in 2025 when the next contract comes up, he believes they will go to 8. And I have some takes on that in a second. But if they go to 8, that's 4-2-1. That's 7 games. 7 games worth of inventory. The structure is already there because you have a New Year's 6 bowl games, which become neutral site playoff games, plus the national championship is like the Super Bowl. It's played at a different neutral site. It's not played within a bowl game. So the structure is already there. The difference is, and obviously, you know, I hate saying it, but it's true. When you look at the television ratings for the non-playoff bowls, they're essentially irrelevant. How do you make more people watch those games? You put something on it. You make it a playoff. Exactly. You know, it's a no-brainer at that point. I think the system is designed to go to 8 eventually. The question that I have is, if and when, God willing, it does, all right, how are you going to pick those 8? All right. And that's where the idea of the CFP committee is actually diabolically brilliant, because they can say very simply, look, you guys signed up for this system, agreed to the committee in the format that it was, and our committee says that your team wasn't good enough based on the quote eye test, end quote. I think that's kind of what Mike Oresko is getting at, because the old BCS ranking system, remember, it used the AP, it used the coaches, and then it used a composite of the computer rankings. And I tend to favor the computer rankings because they're not fallible, really, like humans are. But if you go to 8, what is there to stop the power or the autonomous 5 conferences from saying, all right, we're going to keep the committee. We're not going to have automatic bids to the 5 conference champions. We're just going to keep the committee. If they deserve to get in, they deserve to get in. And let's say they do, what is forcing them to say we're going to have the highest ranked group of 5 champion in there? There's nothing forcing them to say that, because they're in control of the entire pot, and the NCAA can't force them to do it. So maybe I'm cynical, but I'm really skeptical of the idea that even if we go to 8, that a group of 5 team will get a shot even in that system. Because they could just as easily do what they did this week, which is, man, Cincinnati's getting awfully close. Let's drop them to number 9.
Yep. And here's another thing that drives me nuts. If you look at the rankings of sports in America, you have the NFL number 1, college football number 2. If college football were smart, they would do the playoff like we talked about, not because we're like, I mean, I'll speak for myself. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I'm smart enough to see that it's so obvious. College football has a chance to be the most popular sport in America if they do the playoff. And I'll tell you why. Another thing that drives me crazy I don't care if it's SportsCenter. I don't care if it's any of the talking heads, including Game Day. I watch all that stuff. But it amazes me how they say if we have more of a playoff, it takes away from the regular season. Are you kidding me?
It's preposterous.
There's a lot of there are a lot of games that when that team loses, they're out of there. It's like elimination games. And it's actually, for me, it's created more, I can speak personally, more excitement to watch the regular season, because these matchups really matter even more, because if they don't win that game and they may not win their conference, they're not going to do it. And I think it should be like the basketball tournament used to be. If you win the conference, you're in. If you don't, you're out. And that makes the regular season. Doesn't that make the regular season more exciting? The fact that if you don't win your conference, you just don't get in.
Plus, didn't you already, if you're saying if adding more teams devalues the regular season doesn't mean anything to the committee anyway. We've already seen multiple teams from one conference get into this playoff. If the regular season mattered, then you would only have one team from each of the from one conference into that. If Notre Dame beats Clemson again, and Clemson gets in, then obviously the regular season doesn't matter, right? So they're making an argument against the playoff that they've already made for themselves. And like you were saying, Dave, the truth is, if you allow more teams into the playoff, it makes the regular season more significant. Because now, if you're a non-autonomous 5 conference team, you don't have to say, well, you know, and by the way, the regular season for the non-autonomous 5 is irrelevant now anyway. Because it doesn't matter how many games you win, you're not going to get in. So half of college football, half of FBS college football, 65 teams out of 130 or 131, however many we have now, are in this purgatory where they can't play for a national championship and they can't move down to FCS, right? So what are they going to do? Yeah, you know, it's a preposterous setup, and the people I blame for it is not ESPN, okay? They're the ones who are providing the platform. You got to remember that the reason why we have this is the playoff, and why we had the BCS was because when Monday Night Football went off of ABC, Disney didn't have the rights to the Super Bowl anymore, which is the most important sporting event in all of broadcast television. So they needed something to get that revenue. What makes up that revenue for not having a Super Bowl? Three college football playoff games. So it's the conferences, it's the major conferences, the ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the Big 12. They're the ones who you have to look at, and it's the presidents that you have to look at of the schools in those conferences. They are the ones who are making the system the way it is. If they wanted to change it, they could change it tomorrow in a heartbeat. All it takes is a Zoom call, but they don't want to.
Amen. And whenever they do, they'll finally get my respect. College, every other sport has a real national champion. And one day, maybe before I die, we'll see a real champion and not a made for TV event. Let's talk about the bowl game for UCF. Because I can get off on my tangents on how I feel about the playoff, or whatever it is now.
That's all right. I'm here for it, Dave.
Okay, cool. I just it frustrates me. But beautiful city, Boca Raton. You got the Boca Raton Bowl coming up on Tuesday, 7 p.m. Speaking on ESPN, you guys have got to love. I mean, that's a tough assignment going to Boca Raton. Come on.
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually grew up about 15 minutes from Boca Raton. So I'm like, okay. So I'm overly familiar with how, with South Palm Beach and Northern Broward County. And I got to tell you, if you told me when I graduated from high school that number one, Florida Atlantic would have a major Division I college football team, and number two, that they would host a bowl game in Boca Raton, I would have asked you what you were smoking, and because I never thought in a million years that would ever happen. But, you know, for UCF, it's the next best thing to playing in the Cure Bowl, which is here in Orlando, because you're still in the state of Florida. You get to play a quality opponent. Granted, it's not a New Year's Six berth like you were hoping for at the beginning of the season, but it's actually UCF's first trip to this bowl game in its history. And the best part is you get to showcase your program down in South Florida, where there's a lot of UCF fans and a lot of recruits. And that's the fun part about it. And it's only a 3-hour drive. You can't beat that.
No question about it, especially with COVID-19 going on, and the less travel you do, the better. Right. Bubba, I know you want to chime in about the matchup.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this matchup, as soon as I saw that it was going to happen, I mean, two of the premier offensive teams in the nation, two tremendous quarterbacks in Dylan Gabriel and Zach Wilson. Gabriel, 30 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Zach Wilson, 29-3. Just remarkable numbers, video game-like for these two quarterbacks. Just talk about that, and then we'll dive into some of the other specifics about this matchup.
Well, outside of the playoff, which we don't know right now, to me, this is the best matchup of all the bowl games that we have. And it may end up being the best game out of all the games that we have if the playoff games become a dud. Because like you said, because of these two quarterbacks between Zach Wilson and Dylan Gabriel. Zach Wilson's going to go to the NFL. He's an outstanding prospect. He has been fantastic all year. Dylan Gabriel, he's a finalist for a couple of postseason awards now. Dylan, you know, for as undersized as he is, he's had a very sneaky good season this year. When you think about, you know, like what he has done with this offense, he's He's 61%, which I think is actually a little bit low for him, but it's because he's so aggressive in taking shots downfield. He's thrown for 3,300 yards, which is already very close to I think it's top four all time at UCF for a single season. He's done it in 9 games. And the part that I think is really exciting is, he made some mistakes last year in some of the losses. He's kept those mistakes to a minimum, 30 touchdown passes, only 4 interceptions on the year. He's insanely accurate. And that for me, like when I look at quarterbacks, that's what I want is accuracy. And we've talked about how good Zach Wilson is. And just to give you an idea of his numbers, he's at 73%, 30 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. So we're expecting what should be a pretty high scoring game. I think the over under for this, actually, I checked it on Oddshark before we came on. The over under right now is at 70.5. I think you're stealing money. BYU is a 4-point favorite, which is down from 5 where it opened. But, think about if the game finishes 38-34, that's 72. I mean, come on, right? You don't think this game would end up, on paper would be like a 38-34 contest. So it's two of the best offenses in the country. You mentioned how good BYU's offense is. And UCF this year, obviously, number 2 in total offense. They were number 1 for most of the season. Number 2 in passing offense. Number 24 rushing offense. I think that part gets really kind of shoved under the rug is how good UCF is running the ball, especially when the offense is really clicking. 6th best scoring offense in the country at 44.3 points per game. And then you look over BYU, they're 10th in total offense at 510 yards per game. UCF averages 585. But, the key for BYU, they're a weaker rushing team than UCF at 45th in the country. But their passing offense, they're 12th. And their scoring offense, they're at 43 points per game. I think that the thing with BYU, though, that kind of concerns me. Well, obviously, the offense, how good their offense is against UCF's defense, and they have a chance to give UCF fits if they run the ball and control the clock and kind of keep UCF's offense off the field. That's what Cincinnati was able to do, and that's kind of the book on UCF. But, UCF's defense, boy, they give up a lot of yards, they give up a lot of points, but their primary goal is causing havoc. They want havoc plays out there. Turnover margin, UCF is tied for 6th best in the country. And that's because Randy Shannon's defense lives off of causing turnovers, getting sacks, making a lot of tackles behind the line, making big plays. And they have to do that because they're on the field for so much. On the other side for BYU, their defense has been outstanding, but I don't think that their defense is quite as strong as it looks because they've only played aside from, games against, other independents, Conference USA and the Sun Belt, they've only played 2 teams in the American, Houston and Navy. Now they beat the tar out of Navy, but Navy's been struggling for much of the year. And they were in a fairly tight game with Houston until late when they pulled away. But this is going to be a real challenge for BYU, I think, as well, because this is not exactly the kind of offense that they're used to seeing. And like I said, UCF does run the ball better than people think. And I think that Josh Heupel has been very carefully watching that game tape from Coastal Carolina. Now, Coastal really did slow the game down, and that's not what UCF does. But I think UCF's goal is to be physical with them when the Knights have the ball, run the football, with Greg McCray out there. And a couple of other guys who've been really solid out there for UCF throughout the course of the season, and really try and keep BYU's offense off the field. If UCF can get out to a 14-0 lead, as they usually seem to do here and there, I think that bodes well. But the other thing is they have to close out games in the second half, and that's something that UCF has had a problem with. So that's going to be a big, big factor in this bowl game.
Now, Jeff, one of those other running backs that you referenced, in addition to Greg McCray, Otis Anderson has 600 plus yards and also has, 10 to 15 receptions out of the backfield. So is he going to be available? Because I saw I was looking at some stuff yeah, earlier today that he was injured.
Well, he's not injured. He's actually going to be foregoing the rest of the season because he's a senior. So gotcha. He won't be available for the game. So Otis won't be there, which is a bummer, at least from what we've seen. But on the other hand, UCF does have some guys who backed him up who are really, really talented. Demarius Good, a freshman from the Orlando area, who's gotten a little bit of run here and there. Also RJ Harvey, who they're looking to get a good look at. We've talked about Greg McCray, who I don't know how Greg McCray did not get even an honorable mention all conference, because Greg McCray actually led UCF in rushing this past season. And I'm really interested to see what Bentavious Thompson does. He's kind of the bruiser back of that stable, kind of like what Taj McGowan was before. And actually a guy that that Dave Thomas mentioned before, Juwan Hamilton. When Juwan was at UCF, they like having two speed guys and a bruiser guy in this offense. And Juwan was the bruiser guy. We used to call him the hammer. And then Taj McGowan kind of had that. Remember, he had that fourth and one touchdown run, that long touchdown run against Memphis in the game in the Liberty Bowl in 2018. Benno Thompson has kind of taken over that role. And Benno has been, I think, a real good find for UCF. He's just a bowling ball of a kid. And he's averaging almost 5.5 yards a carry. So I expect to see a lot of Greg McCray and a lot of Benno Thompson in this game when UCF goes to the running game. So I'm really excited to see what they do with him. And then you're going to see some of those other guys as well. So, what's that going to look like? Is Johnny Richardson going to get some more work? Are we going to see more of RJ Harvey? The depth is there and the speed is there for UCF. So I'm really interested to see what that looks like.
Curiosity killed the cat. Out of curiosity, Jeff, how did Josh Heupel and the Knights do as far as recruiting goes? And National Signing Day, I would be remiss not to ask you. So I wanted to ask you about that very thing yesterday.
You know, Dave, one of the things that fans who follow us at Black and Gold Banneret know is that I absolutely hate recruiting, everything about it, with the flame of 1,000 suns. And I've actually gone out of my way to prove that the whole recruiting thing is bunk, because we have a database on our site where I take all the recruiting class. I took all the recruiting classes going back to 2004, and I evaluated them after all the players had gone. And I kind of developed this sort of five-star system based on that. And UCF really values player development, as do a lot of teams. I'm not saying that that's not important, but you got Mac Brown, who's talking all about five stars, nothing but five stars, right? And then, UCF, ECU, all of us here in the American are like, we got to develop these players. And UCF, I think, has been very good at developing players. As far as the needs that they got, the holes that they're filling from guys who are leaving, Josh Heupel said they really needed to work on the defensive line, which they certainly did. They also got two big tight ends, which, going back to Heupel's time, when he was at Mizzou, when he was their offensive coordinator, they really worked hard in getting the tight end into the mix, because he does like to run the football. Even though UCF runs such a fast pace in terms of a lot of plays, they snap the ball typically within 5 seconds when they're running tempo from when the play clock starts. He does like running it out of sort of a big set where you have a couple tight ends, some big wide receivers, and he likes running the ball at that point. So he's got some tight ends. He also got a really good running back out, who's a local kid also from Lake Brantley High School. So, I have every reason to suspect that the coaching staff is satisfied. They also got one of those defensive linemen. Not that this really matters much, but they got him from IMG Academy. He had initially been an LSU commit for a while, and he flipped to UCF. So I think that they're really happy about that. But they're pretty happy with it. And then now we got to see what the transfer market brings around and what the late signing period around Groundhog's Day brings in.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting bowl game. And you're definitely right when you're saying earlier, it's going to be one of my favorites to watch this year. Good luck to the Knights. And thank you so much for coming on. Can you tell folks how we can find your work?
Sure thing. Make sure you follow us at UCF_Banneret. And I'm glad you guys have the graphic up at the top that shows everybody how Banneret is spelled. Yep. It's UCF_Banneret on Twitter. We're also at Facebook.com/Black and Gold Banneret. We also have a YouTube channel where we actually work on the same platform that you guys here, that you guys work with here, where if any, we have some post-game reactions, which we'll be doing after the bowl game as well. We'll be having a lot of preview material coming up over the weekend and into Monday and Tuesday. blackandgoldbanneret.com is where you want to be. We're thankful to our partners at SB Nation who brought us on a couple years ago. It's been a great ride, and it's fun to be with you guys on a Thursday night here. And it's getting chilly down here in Orlando. By the way, it's down to the 40s tonight. So,
oh my goodness, poor baby.
I know. I got the thick jackets out. I got my trusty air. I got my New Jersey Devils hat. Whenever it's cold out, I bust out the hat of a hockey team just to make it look like I know what I'm doing.
No doubt. Well, good luck to the Knights, and wish you all the best. And hopefully 21 will be safe and definitely a lot better than 20's been for us.
Amen, Dave. Thank you so much. You too. Bubba, thank you. It's good to talk to you guys, and stay safe, stay warm, and we'll be seeing you down the road.
All right, man. Take care. Enjoy it. Jeff.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right. Appreciate Jeff sharing there. That was great, Bubba. A great show. And I know we're running along, but certainly three great guys, three great guests, for no doubt about it.
Yeah, really enjoyed the show tonight. Three excellent guests, like you said, and enjoyed talking a little hoops on the Pirate side of things, in addition to talking about two football games that are headed our way here in the next, 5-6 days.
No doubt about it. I tell you what, it's going to be interesting to see. Appreciate him and Dave, obviously, and Alan early on in the show. And very excited, Bubba. One of the big question marks for East Carolina over the last year or so has been, who's the chancellor going to be? It's been a board. We could have made a board game out of it. Who's the chancellor going to be for East Carolina? And today we got our answer.
Yeah, the wait is finally over. I could not believe this when I saw it. 37-year-old. I would like to know if that's the youngest chancellor ever for East Carolina University. But Dr. Philip Rogers, a guy who had worked at East Carolina several years ago, back, I want to say he was 24 or 25 at the time, but he had worked with Dr. Steve Ballard. And right. So very excited to have Dr. Philip Rogers, who's a Greenville native, I might add. He actually attended Wake Forest, got his bachelor's in communications, went to UNC and got his master's in public administration there. And then he went to Penn to get his doctorate degree. So very excited to have Dr. Philip Rogers. It seems like an excellent fit. Unfortunately, the audio today was unavailable, which just boggles my mind. But nonetheless, he had some excellent quotes, according to what Pirate Radio was putting out there earlier this afternoon.
No doubt. And I'm happy to see it from everything that I see. And I hate to use the term, but I'm going to use it anyway. It looks like that everything that this guy represents checks the boxes. You know, like with ECU, he gets Greenville. It's not a political hack. It's actually somebody that is an educator. That's all I asked for. And I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised. Obviously, this is the honeymoon period because it's the very first day, not even the first day on the job, but as far as knowing who the chancellor is going to be, a J.H. Rose graduate. I have people that I've already talked to that are very happy with a Greenville native, ECU ties, J.H. Rose, all that stuff. And not that, I mean, there's plenty of people out there that could fit that, but I think that I think they got it right, and we'll give credit where credit's due for the trustees. And the fact, I like the fact that he's 37, because that means he has a lot of youth. And who knows, Bubba, you know, we had a lot of great chancellors, and with Aiken and Ballard, and going all the way back to certainly probably the best, Leo Jenkins, and they had a nice little run. Those guys did, and maybe this guy being 37, that he could have a nice little run where I have stability at the chancellor level.
Yeah, we certainly need it, and I think that will be the case. And based on the stuff we're hearing, obviously we'll see over the coming months and years. But I apologize if you mentioned this, Dave. We're talking about his connections. His wife has 2 degrees from East Carolina University. And then in addition to that, he has several family members as well who are also East Carolina, alums and fans. So very well connected, and obviously an extremely bright individual. Excited to have him as our new chancellor. Also, how about National Signing Day yesterday? And you heard the comments from head coach Mike Houston. You can hear those by going to ecupirates.com or ECU Athletics Facebook page, and we'll put those out again. I do have that video as well, so we'll put that out on our YouTube channel and Facebook page also. And then, looking over some of the highlights, 16 new additions to our roster. 12 of those are scholarship guys among the signees. And crazy that you have 16 guys, 8 different states represented, 4 from North Carolina, 3 from Alabama, 2 from Florida, 2 from Ohio, 2 from Virginia, and then 1 each from South Carolina, Georgia, and Texas. And positionally, you had 1 quarterback, and 2 offensive linemen, and 2 wide receivers, 2 tight ends, and a running back, for a total of 8 offensive players, and then 7 guys on the defensive side of the ball, 5 defensive backs. And those defensive backs have a lot of versatility, which I'll get to here in a moment. And then you also had 1 defensive lineman and then also a linebacker. And you also had a kicker from the Raleigh area. So 16 guys coming into the program. And again, 12 of those are scholarship guys and 4 preferred walk-ons. And those defensive backs, very impressed with the length, athleticism, and also experience that we're adding. You have UNC transfer DJ Ford, and DJ Ford 6'3", 215. And then you have Julius Wood 6'2", 196, who's a JUCO guy that has 3 years of eligibility. And then Kingston McKinstry 6'1", 195, and he has 3 years of eligibility as a JUCO player. So an awful lot of length and athleticism and talent being brought in on the back end for, Coach Ellis and Coach Weaver to coach up.
No doubt. And we can go on and on and on about Coach Houston, but he's building this program. There's no question about it. I'm just tickled to death. I love National Signing Day, and I know this is the early signing day, but it's just a special thing, just like in the NFL with a draft. It's a big deal for me. I know, Bubba, that it's huge for you as well, and just really happy with I can look back at this year, as crazy as it was, but we can see the program heading the right direction. So kudos to Mike Houston and staff. They've worked their tails off. They didn't know how much heavy lifting they were going to have to do, Bubba, but certainly I was talking to our engineer, Al Cannon, today. How cool would it be next year to do a bowl game? He said, a quote, that would be awesome. He loves Mike Houston. He loves ECU and the program, and he obviously loves Dave, Kyle, and Bubba. So he wants to hang out with us next year at a bowl game, my friend.
Yeah, and those are certainly my plans. When we know that's the plan of Coach Houston and staff, and you look at it, I mean, it wasn't far from happening this year. I mean, it really wasn't, like the three of us were talking here in the last couple of days. You obviously had that Tulsa game, and we all know what happened there. And if that goes the other way like it should have, we're 4-5, and we're probably adding a game to get to – I mean, who knows? I mean, you have North Texas playing App State down in the Myrtle Beach Bowl, and they're a 4-5 team. So you could have had a – you could have had an East Carolina at 4-5, but we'd have probably added a game and hopefully gotten a 5-5, but it wasn't to be. But I'm definitely excited about the direction this program is headed, and I really think that we'll be bowling next year.
No question about it. And obviously, folks, stay tuned to all of our platforms here with Facebook, social media. And we're on every podcast player pretty much to man and woman knows about for sure. There's some that we're on that we don't even know about. But Don't forget, coming up on Saturday, we are very excited, as we talked to Dave Thomas earlier, one of our guests, as East Carolina is hosting JMU. Airtime will be 12:30 for the radio and 1 p.m. on ESPN+. And Bubba, after the game, we have Pirate Basketball Overtime. We're very excited about that. Bubba works so hard. Appreciate you, buddy, for all that you do. And we'll have, being home game, we'll have the post-game comments from Joe Dooley and a player or two for sure. And that'll probably be, 3:30, 4 o'clock, somewhere around there. So just stay tuned after the game. We'll definitely have an update. That's why you need to subscribe to our YouTube channel, or certainly like our Facebook page and follow us there. And you can find out all the notifications on our show. Bubba, do you have anything before we go?
Yeah, just follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ and then on Instagram at The Sports Objective. And like Dave just mentioned, like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. That way, when we put out a notification or share the link, you'll know when we're going live. So I really think the Pirates will bounce back on Saturday and hopefully get to 6-1 against JMU.
That'll be fantastic. The next five games, folks, are very crucial to this season. Every game is important, but if you look at the next five games, we have to win a lot of those games coming up. So we'll look at JMU's on the clock, and we're very excited. Thanks to all our great guests tonight, and we appreciate that very much. Thanks to Kyle from LaGrange Barber, Bubba Rosenbaum. I'm Dave Richmond. Thank you so much for always listening and viewing. You've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates!